So sticking with this afternoon's theme of future directions, we have a panel discussion for about 40 minutes and hopefully one that stimulates some good conversation and questions from you. So start thinking, get your brains working. Our head panelist, or the first person to speak, is Jackie Weprick. Jackie has been the general manager of NFAC since its inception in 2005. Prior to this, she did some project-based work for the Farm Animal Care Group in Alberta and other provincial industry groups. So let me bring up the stalwart, the sensible, the determined, and sometimes disarming Jackie Weprick.
That's quite the introduction. Well, I don't know about you guys, but my brain hurts from all the information over the last day and a half. I think it's from my perspective, I think we've had some absolutely fantastic speakers, and I hope you guys have enjoyed them as much as I have. So now we're interested in looking to the future, and where do we go from here? We're coming to the end of the AgriFlex project chapter of NFAC's existence, so that's what's funded everything we've done up until now, including this conference. So it's time to reflect on what's been accomplished and plan for the future. And in planning for that future, and I guess maybe I'm taking a bit of a page from Stephanie here, we want to engage all of you and invite your input that will be used to grow NFAC into that future. A key value of NFAC is its collaborative approach for addressing farm animal welfare while maintaining the viability of Canadian animal agriculture. So this is your chance to tell us what you see as being NFAC's future. But before we open things up, I want to frame the discussion just a little bit. In 2011, we asked Dr. David Fraser to provide closing reflections on that conference, and many of you were there as well, so that some of this will sound very familiar. He highlighted his vision for NFAC going forward, and we've captured his vision on the slide. Each of our panel members today will also be reflecting upon their vision for NFAC in a few moments. For anyone who doesn't know Dr. Fraser, though I don't think there are too many in this room that can say that, he's kind of like a rock star of animal welfare. He's world-renowned, respected, and his sage words of advice are definitely worth us reflecting upon. He also said, in addition to his vision, he also said to 2011 conference attendees, and I quote, "It's touching to see this group and the dedication and quality of people who have been attracted to this issue." He praised the new code development process by saying, "I like its emphasis on an outcome-based, environment-based, and process-based measures. I think that this is a good balance that has not always been captured in processes elsewhere and other times." However, he also shared a concern about NFAC's future and a hope. "The thought that this organization is like a contract employee on a fixed term should strike terror into all of our hearts, and I hope we will all go back to our respective corners determined to give this organization the future it deserves." So, how far have we come? At NFAC's last conference in 2011, we were still in the early stages of several code updates and the development of the animal care assessment framework process and the dairy animal care assessment program. 2 years later, and we're celebrating 4 newly updated codes, significant progress on 4 more, a new animal care assessment process, and a new dairy animal care assessment program. And the fact that we're still continuing to work collaboratively on the highly emotional issue of animal welfare is another really great achievement, I think. Over the last 2 days, we've celebrated our achievements, but acknowledged that the challenges we've faced and will face, and we've also acknowledged the challenges we've faced and will face into the future. Perhaps we've not wholly met Dr. Fraser's vision, but I think we've made some excellent progress. More work to do. We also set the bar very high for ourselves over the last few years, unsustainably high. NFAC needed to prove itself, or at least that was my feeling. We needed to prove ourselves. And we have. And when I say we, I do mean all of us. NFAC is all of us in this room, and none of what's been achieved could have happened without the truly remarkable individuals that have sat on code development committees, NFAC's board and executive, the Animal Care Assessment Framework Steering Committee, and the Dairy Animal Care Assessment Program Team. Everyone is suffering from code and assessment fatigue, for sure. So NFAC's future needs to include a work plan that is both more manageable and sustainable. We've also been so busy doing the heavy lifting, and I guess maybe some of us have had fun, I think, along the way. Certainly the Equine Code people had fun. But we certainly have been doing a lot of heavy lifting. That one thing we've not had a real good chance to do, that we've just scratched the surface on, is to tell anyone outside of NFAC about what we have been doing, what we have done, and how we've done it. For me, NFAC's future needs to include doing a better job of telling our story. If we can better manage the workload and better tell our story, perhaps Dr. Fraser's concern that NFAC be seen like a contract employee on a fixed term will be assuaged. So there's my bit as NFAC's general manager and my reflections over the last few years. And now I'd like to turn to our panel for their reflections. So as I call their names up, if they can come and come up to the podium, I think we'll have them speak at the mic. And then sit down. So Edouard Isnong is the first panelist, and Edouard is of course our long-term chair for many years. But today he's not speaking as NFAC's chair; he's speaking as a pork producer. So, well, he's going like this. So I don't know. We'll see what he says. So Edouard, please come up.
Thank you, Jackie, and good afternoon to everyone. And thank you for your patience and not having left like a few others. Certainly, the challenge is, I think we have done a lot of work, and there's a lot of work to do. Running 8 code reviews at the same time, that means a lot of efforts. I mentioned that yesterday in my opening remarks also. The challenge is also to keep all the stakeholders at the table, the members or the regular members and the associate members. It's voluntary and it's consensus. But the team we have there, I think we have about all the stakeholders. Maybe there's room for others who are interested and want to bring an input. And certainly, and I'm very glad also the implementation from the retailers who are back at the table and very committed to participate in the discussions. That's very well appreciated. Also, a lot to do. Okay, now what I mean with a lot to do, okay, the codes are under review, but it's also a question for implementation. Catherine made a presentation what the hog sector is, or the pork sector is facing. It's not equal for everyone to implement a code. When we talk about management practices, or using analytics or those kind of things, yeah, that's feasible. But when we are talking about changing concrete, walls, and bricks, that's a huge cost and not easy to implement. And I hope people would consider that also. So also I see an advantage in what we are doing, and that's that we can differentiate our product and different attributes. And I think that we should do a better job in marketing that also. We're doing a lot of efforts on our farms, the food safety, for the environment with our farm plans, and now with that animal welfare. And that story has to be told to the consumers. And I think also maybe we should develop a trademark about our Canadian system that can be publicized. I'm also a bit scared. There are so many standards or programs around. If each retailer starts his own program, consumers are going to confuse and we're not deserving. So I think that we should make a serious thought to that, how it's feasible. Not that NFAC will implement it, but certainly different commodities can use it if they are willing to promote that also forgot to mention, there are a lot of campaigns about buying local. That's another attribute that we can certainly use also in our strategy. Jackie mentioned it, communications. We have to get our story known. We are doing a fantastic job, and producers are doing a lot of efforts on their farms. So communications, that the consumers knows that there's something happening and that something is going on. And I'm not saying that that producers do not care for their animals. They care for their animals. But now we certainly, with programs and assessments, we can also prove it and give a lot more credibility to what we are doing. So maybe developing a trademark and developing labels. Also communication with retailers. I'll come again to retailers. I think the retailers are very important. They talk with the consumers every day. The idea from I don't know which gentleman it was yesterday, suggesting Tim Hortons to have a video or whatever, that because the people are there. I think that our retailers can also show that. We can maybe, producers, commodities can maybe develop it, but certainly we cannot put it in the stores. That's up to the retailers to do it. Also, I think it's also very important the fact that that in fact exists with all the stakeholders and working on consensus basis, that increase our chances to talk within one voice and all on the same tune. And I think that's very important to cultivate that approach. Thank you very much for your patience. I know I'm not the best of the speakers.
Eduard has done a lot over the years to keep ANFAC moving forward and deserves a lot of the credit for keeping this unruly bunch together, I think. Our next panel member is Sonia Fiorini, who is the Senior Director for Corporate Social Responsibility at Loblaw. And Loblaw is also an associate member of the National Farm Animal Care Council. We're happy to have them.
Just before she started, I forgot to mention also, Jackie did it, but we are here to listen to you and your direction also.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'd like to take this opportunity to commend everybody in this room for taking ownership of these very complex and important issues. My name is Sonia, obviously, as Jackie said, and I've been in corporate social responsibility at Loblaw since 2008. Although I'm not an expert in animal welfare or one of the category managers for meat, I have worked for Canada's largest grocery retailer for the past 15 years and understand the company's vision. Although I spent a lot of time on issues such as genetically modified organisms, waste, packaging, reduction in energy efficiency in our operations, I have also been involved with animal welfare for the past 3 years, and I have had the opportunity to work with many of you in the room today. What I can offer to you today is my company's perspective and some of the challenges that we face and the commitments that we have made. In 2011, we said we would transition all of our private label, that's the President's Choice brand, eggs to free run, and we are on track to doing this with only one more private label SKU to do. And most recently, as many of you are aware here, made a commitment along with 7 other grocery retailers in Canada to only purchase fresh pork from alternative housing environments by 2022. I was recently asked to write an article for one of the latest issues of Diplomat magazine on our industry commitment, in which I commended farmers and producers for their continued leadership in this area while also recognizing the challenges that we all face ahead. I also wrote that animal welfare isn't and shouldn't be a competitive advantage in the retail industry. At the end of the day, it's about the welfare of the animal. It would have been irresponsible for us to make these commitments without first understanding the issues and being at the table where these important issues are being discussed, like being right here today. To me, understanding all sides of the issue and taking a holistic approach is very important. That is why Loblaw was there when NFAC first evolved, and today we are associate members and also involved in the ACAM process. Some of our relationships with farmers span decades. Loblaw is a family-run Canadian company that has been around for 125 years and will continue to be a prominent company in the Canadian landscape for many years to come. Therefore, the approach that we take is a long-term one. There is a slide. Oh, yeah, you have that up there. So we are also one of your links to the customer, and animal welfare is on our customer's radar. To help illustrate this, you'll see the slide here, and I want to show you, this is a recent research findings, albeit I know it's from the United States, but it was presented this past August with a conference that I attended, as well as the Retail Council of Canada, with a group of large U.S. retailers and producers that shows growing importance of animal welfare in terms of the attributes a customer wants in a company. It doesn't say a purchase intent, but the animal welfare, but that animal welfare is a basic expectation. In fact, this research aligns with our very own surveys that we conduct every year, and specifically the one that we just did this past April, with both not only our Loblaw customers, but also non-Loblaw shoppers, that shows animal welfare is in the top 10 with our customers. But when we asked which area grocery retailers should be placing some priority on. Society is becoming more food aware than ever before. That was mentioned today several times. But they also think that they shouldn't have to pay more for increased welfare and that it should just be. Consumers have a right to ask questions and demand certain products because, after all, they are the ones that are paying for it. We as retailers have challenges too. We have to balance the request of our customers, producers, and animal rights advocates against what our values are as a company. And our customers expect us to require our vendors to uphold to the right values in a host of different areas, which include animal welfare. I know some of you will disagree with the alternative housing commitment timeline, but there is a great deal of time allotted to reduce the burden and to factor in investments in new installations. The cost of transitioning will have to be factored into the long-term planning, and as retailers, we are equally concerned about the cost of not acting and doing nothing. Simply put, status quo doesn't live here anymore. The train has left the station. It's about building a resilient supply chain and industry over time that includes managing reputational risk of the industry and tailoring it to changing consumer concerns, priorities, and needs. I believe the pork industry can be industry leading and has tremendous opportunity to innovate to new systems and provide positive outcomes. I would argue that from Dr. Fraser's list of recommendations for NFAC that he presented in 2011, all of them as retailers are important to us, and we need NFAC to play this role for us and to be the conduit. We need NFAC to continue to be a resource to get the right science-based information as well as a balanced view. We would like to continue to work collaboratively with all of our stakeholders well into the future, since we are also part of the value chain and a direct link to the consumer of your products. Let's not forget that the customer is the reason why we are here. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Sonia. All right, so our next speaker was supposed to be David Truss, but David decided that the welfare of his marriage was more important than being with us for the rest of this afternoon. And I won't get into the story behind that one, but if you can ask David next time you see him. He probably made the right choice. Gord Doonan with CFIA has agreed to stand in for David. And maybe since he's on the road to retirement, we might get some pretty blunt messages. I don't know. But... We'll take a chance and see what we get here. Thanks, Gord. Oh, he's wearing David's name tag, too. So this is David. David takes responsibility for everything Gord says. How's that?
It's a little known fact that Gord Doonan and I are twins. So Dave gave me the 5-minute prep for this. Thank you very much, Dave. Looking at David Fraser's recommendations, we believe that this is a very good vision, and we also believe that NFAC is the right organization to deliver it, and we're in complete agreement with that. It's a long endeavor, long term, and we have various options along the way, and at each stage we need to choose those options very carefully. So I'll go through some of these right now. First of all, revolution or evolution. And this is a point that was raised by Ron DeHaven in the United States a few years ago as well. There's an appeal to make quick change. Sometimes the correct solution seems to be obvious on the surface. However, a revolutionary approach rarely stands the test of time. It's rarely balanced. And it never attempts to accommodate the interests of everybody. So it's not really a sustainable approach in most cases. Another choice is between a good image and being practical to implement. It's also appealing to take the choice that looks good on the surface. And this usually means jumping into a fad. But fads change over time. So if you jump in, you may be looking in from the outside after a while. Improving animal welfare is for the benefit of animals. It's not a popularity contest. And it may be, if you take the surface, a good image approach, it may be contrary to science, and it may be contrary to other objectives besides animal welfare. Another choice is between following trends and following sound science. There's pressure often, well, there's always pressure to follow one trend or another. But the question is, why? Is there wisdom in the trend of the day? Another choice is leading markets or following the markets. Now, if we lead the markets, what happens if the markets change? And we've decided to offer something that is no longer wanted. And what if we lead the markets and people don't want to pay for it? So that may not succeed. The other option of following the markets, well, for one thing, are the markets always wise? What are they based on? And if others have already set the trend for what the markets are doing, would not Canada lose its ability to have its own brand? Will we not then appear to be followers? But there's an alternative, and that is for industry to engage back and forth with the markets. So the question is how to do that. Another choice, which we're often asked, is to impose standards by the government versus having all stakeholders develop their own standards. Now, government-imposed standards, usually regulations, we're often asked to do that, but I would ask you, are governments wise? Do they always make the right choice? Regulations have their place. And in Canada, we have a balanced approach with regulations and voluntary standards by stakeholders. Regulations also have their limitations, which is why they're not the only approach. They're rigid, they're costly, they take a long time to change, whereas voluntary standards can be adapted very quickly. So the two go hand in hand. Another choice is to be static or to be open to change. To be static means to defend the status quo. Isn't it arrogant to think that we possess all the knowledge now and that new information might become available later, that we shouldn't be open to change? And I'll end with two questions. How can we improve the signals between industry and the markets? And how do we engage or educate what was called earlier today the unengaged public?
Thanks very much, Gord. And our final panel member will be Jeff Erton from the BCSPCA, who's another long-serving NFAC board member and executive member.
Thanks, Jackie. I was gonna sort of end with this point, but Gord touched on it a bit, so I think I'm gonna start with it. And one of the things that struck me today from Stephanie McCallum's presentation was her point about, and I took notes here, and I don't know if I got it word for word, but if you want results, be prepared to be open, transparent, and willing to move forward in a different way. And I think this is a challenge for challenge and an opportunity for NFAC to figure this one out. How can we engage a broader range of members of the public and producers on the ground in a more meaningful way? Because we think we have all the right representatives in the room, but it may be that we need to cast the net wider somehow to ensure that we're getting a greater level of buy-in for the work that we're doing. I don't think it's just about educating people. I think citizens, consumers, and producers can all be very easily offended by that patronizing notion of that you just need to be educated. You're misinformed, you're not well-informed, and you need to be educated. And I think it's equally patronizing to producers and to consumers to communicate to that to them, that we just need to educate you. We need to engage them. We need to engage them in a dialogue. And I'm not sure how to do that. So that's a question, I think, for everybody. How do we do that in a way that's meaningful and that casts that net wider? I think it's going to take more than just turning up the volume on a one-way message out. It's going to take a real engagement and dialogue both ways. Another thread that I heard through today was this this feeling about how we need an honest commitment to doing what's right so that we have something to talk about. And I think we've developed this great consensus process with the codes of practice. We've come to consensus on a number of codes that we've been able to successfully get out the door. And I think, you know, I heard that today reflected in Jeff Ansell this morning talking about how it's important to show empathy and to show concern, but to have that coupled with a meaningful commitment to action. So it's not just about talking about how farmers care about what they do, but showing it. And it reminded me of something that we heard a number of times from another longtime presenter at NFAC meetings, David Smith, who was formerly with Sobeys. And his very common quote was, "Trust me doesn't cut it anymore." It's true, you gotta show it now. People wanna see the evidence that these standards are being complied with. So that, I think, is the path forward for NFAC, and I think, and all of its members. I think there's a really great process in place now that we have with the Animal Care Assessment Framework to empower industry to be able to show that these new codes are being complied with. And I think that's really going to help industry to fulfill on one of the recommendations that came out of Jeff Spooner's work, which was to encourage honesty and integrity in those marketing practices, so that when industry goes out and wants to talk about the codes of practice and the commitment to animal welfare that they represent, that there's an assurance behind that. And just to reemphasize again, I think NFAC is the right body to do that. There are some great tools in place now, and we have all the right people in the room here, and NFAC in here too, to solve the problems that we haven't figured out yet. The engagement stuff that's been referred to a few times, how to provide an assurance. Maybe we haven't solved those problems with the exact items that need to be checked off, the tasks that need to be checked off on the list, but I think we have the right people in the room to be able to do it. So that's the path forward for NFAC, I think, for the next 5 to 10 years, is to continue to put our heads together and talk through things so that we can come up with an approach that's going to continue to be credible. Thank you.
Well, thank you to each one of our panelists. So now that they've shared their reflections, we're going to open it up to hear from all of you. We do have Betsy, I think, is keeping notes. Somebody's keeping notes, because we are keeping track of, yes, I'm getting a nod, of everything you are going to provide as input, and it will be discussed amongst the NFAC board. And I think we are committed to that enhanced collaboration and really listening to each one of your messages on the vision that you see for NFAC going forward. So I hope someone is going to put up their hand soon, because I will pick on some people if no one volunteers. Does anyone want to go first to either challenge one of our panelists on the vision that they have, or agree with them, or put forward another vision, another action? Eugene, I knew I could count on you.
Jackie, it seems to me you avoided one speaking about one of Dr. Fraser's tenets, which was you are a contract employee. I want to know, I mean, on one hand you say you want to contemplate a 5 to a 10 year plan, but I haven't heard how your organization will be funded for the next 5 or 10 years. So it seems to me before we establish and talk about a whole lot of things that we should do, surely we've got to know where the wherewithal comes from. Help me with that, please.
Actually, I'd like to turn that back to you. Help us. And that's a question for everyone in this room, actually. How do we, one of my messages was that we need a work plan that's both manageable and sustainable. Sustainable means that we have the resource base to keep doing what we're doing. And that certainly has been an elusive piece that we've struggled with at the National Farm Animal Care Council. So you're absolutely right. NFAC's board has struggled with that over the years. And I think that that's a challenge that's been put forward. That was David Fraser's challenge to us. How far have we come with it? And so I think everyone needs to maybe present their ideas on how we meet that challenge. So it's up to each one of us to answer that question as well. I don't know if any of the panelists want to step in on that.
Financial resources is always a struggle. We are member of so many organizations, and they all need money. So there's always a limitation how much we can give to one or to the other. But I think also today's maybe a good time for people in the room to express the needs. Most of the directors are here and to receive that message also, that we have the arguments that more has to be done, more has to be done now, and it can be more costly, but it's important. And that's up to you, the room, now to set the priorities or to suggest what the priorities should be.
Anyone want to add to that? I think you're right, Eugene. I mean, that's certainly the first step. NFAC's resource situation is very limited, and we do rely an awful lot on federal government project support to do the work that we do. We do have two applications in under Growing Forward 2 to finish the two codes that have been initiated through the AgriFlex project, so the two poultry codes, and then also to continue to further update codes, and then the assessment component as well. And I see there's a question. Ron, is it? You have a question?
Thank you. Well, I think that what NFAC has done and what Dr. Fraser had said in 2011 is very accurate, is that we've brought together a process, we've brought together the stakeholders, and we have a body now that's, I think, accepted by the stakeholders, both from the producer through to the retailer, and ultimately, as Sonia says, we're here for the consumer to make sure that the products that we produce are acceptable and available for the consumer to have, that we have the privilege of providing them that which they will pay for and provide us with a livelihood. I think it would be a loss to lose NFAC, because I think we need that gatekeeper, if I want to call it, because as Gord says, the market is always changing, and we need a body to monitor those changes and do the changing in both ways. Changes the market, changes also the production in our business is changing. So how do we meet and accept those changes and get them accepted and processed through the whole food chain? So I think NFAC has been doing that, and I think there's a role, an ongoing role for that. And who funds that? That's always a question. Is it funded by those of us in the food chain, or is it a public good, or is it a combination of both? But I think we have to determine first that there is a need and where NFAC has to be, and then, you know, once you have your goals and your visions and your strategy and acceptance through this body here across the food chain, then I think that's when you decide, okay, where do we get the dollars, and is this valuable enough to continue? And we're one commodity that thinks that the dairy industry thinks that this is one organization that is, because animal welfare is vitally important, and we need to have someone that's kind of a gatekeeper of a practical and acceptable organization to keep that in place. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Does anyone want to add to that?
We all knew it was coming. So Kaylee Pugh, Saskatchewan SPCA. One of the, I've said it 100 times, I love NFAC. I think it's a really excellent organization. The broad, multi-stakeholder engaged approach is fantastic. And it's just sort of a comment to a couple things that I've heard people say this afternoon, mostly. I would be really concerned if the emphasis by everyone in this room turns into preserving markets and keeping the consumers happy. This should be about animal welfare. It should be about what's best for the animals. And I realize I'm looking at that from a very narrow perspective, but I would hope that the focus can stay on doing what's right for the animals based on science and producer consensus, and the markets will follow, and the consumers will believe it if it's a good process. They won't believe it if it's just another marketing campaign.
Good point. Gordon.
To go back to the financial sustainability question, I can't remember, another panelist mentioned the idea of there being a cost of not moving forward on these issues. It was Sonia. So there is a cost. There's certainly a cost of not moving forward on these issues in a proactive way, and unfortunately, I think that cost is probably hard to calculate. But I'd be interested in hearing from someone, maybe in the fur industry, who has had experience with people giving up on their product for animal protection reasons. There's an industry that has experience with what can happen when people choose just not to support your, choose not to purchase your product anymore because they have animal protection concerns.
Gee, I wonder who we need to answer that question.
Yes. Well, there's no question that it's easier to keep markets than to get new ones. Excuse me. So, for a variety of reasons, our industry has been under attack. There's no point in going into all of them. But the result is that you can get cut out of certain markets. You can have certain parts of consumer groups or part of the public that take positions that are very hard to reverse. So I think it's really important, and that's what you've alluded to, Jeff, is the cost of doing nothing will far exceed the cost of doing the right thing and being proactive. So having said that, I'm sure there's nobody in this room, none of the stakeholders, who are going to stand up and say, I'm prepared to pay a lot more to support NFAC and to do, you know, the things that need to be done. I just somehow or other expect that these things will be done, the money will come from wherever, and we'll all live happily ever after. And my suggestion is that won't happen. I sit on the NFAC board, and I have been on that board long enough to watch us quibble over a few hundred dollars in order to make budget, and even to the point of being obnoxious enough to say, why would we be spending an hour and a half trying to decide where we're going to get another $10,000? I know some of you remember that. So my challenge would be to all the stakeholders is that we need to come up with more stakeholders that have the commitment, that have the understanding that being proactive is going to be considerably less costly than being reactive. So going forward, this NFAC group, not only does it need to be the go-to group for animal welfare, but everybody needs to understand that that has a cost, and the cost needs to be dealt with better than we've been able to up to now. Part of that will come back to the responsibility of NFAC standing up and finding the time to promote itself. Anybody who's involved with NFAC, works with it closely, understands the significance and the contributions and the potential. But it all comes down to stable funding. I don't think there's a lot of hope in ever getting a significant amount of core funding from government. Your core funding is going to come from industry, all of us in this room who believe actually in this approach. So I would be one of the ones who will be pushing going forward to finding ways of raising more money to do specific things. I'm not suggesting that you take and you double the mandate of what NFAC does. I'm just suggesting that we figure out the correct amount of resources, human and financial, that we need to cover the areas that we have decided are priorities. So I guess, Jeff, you didn't even give me 5 minutes notice. But that's my thoughts.
Thanks, Gary. My eyes are going, oh, there, Ryder.
Thanks, Jackie, and I tried to sit on my butt for this conversation and just listen, but I could not stand up and talk because I've been, like they said yesterday, involved in NFAC for a long time, and I see the value, and I've been through a couple of producers chairing our animal care committee and being involved in the National Farm Animal Care Council, you know, and I see this. We've got a group here who probably is feeling, I'm going to go away from here, understanding what NFAC is, and I think that's a pretty decent body. And I think they're doing some good things, but ask yourself when you go back how deep that understanding penetrates your organization or your field of expertise or whatever you're coming here from. And if you stopped coming to these meetings or going to your association's meetings, would your association have a conversation about NFAC? Say, yeah, we got to keep being involved in that. Oh, the bill's gone up by a couple percent. That's cool. They're bringing value. So the challenge that I think for NFAC is that our penetration doesn't reach as far as it could in all of our member organizations. And I'm probably as guilty as anybody, but going through the code of practice process probably helps your industry group understand what NFAC is doing, but it has to live beyond this room. So Dr. Jansen, you know, other researchers, other people in your circle of influence need to know the value of this outfit. Michelle and people with provincial governments, they need to understand what the value of NFAC is, and every producer organization needs to take that back. The retail and food service channel, you guys need to keep showing up, keep talking to us, become members or associate members, so we're getting it straight from you, and we can march down the road that we need to march down. But if it just stays in this room, it gets pretty tenuous.
So there's, okay, Guy, and I just want to plant a seed because I think it's really important that we do hear from someone from the provinces as well as to what they see as being, you know, how does NFAC link into the provinces and what you might want to be using NFAC for. I think it's important that we hear from you guys. So with that give Guy, you give them some time to think who wants to take that on.
Well, I'm fairly new here to this process, fairly new to this group, and so maybe that's not a, I don't know if that's a good thing, but that's the way it is. And so whenever I come, and so I'm responsible for some of the programs that we're trying to be recognized for with Dairy Farmers of Canada. And of course, animal welfare is a big part of it. And part of the sales job, because this is a business too, is and when you sell this to producers, is that they want to be recognized. And of course, certification. You know, I get calls just about every 2 weeks about a company that wants to help us be certified of some kind and have some kind of logo. And I think there's value. Myself, because there's a lot of sweat that was put in right in this group. With NFAC. And so for us to go in and to ask our producers to become compliant to the code and have some kind of certification for animal welfare had value to our producers. And so, you know, I come to the chair who talked about trademarking, and I do believe there's a lot of value in this. Now, when you do become certification of some kind of recognition program, then, you know, there's always times where you're going to have to pull up, you know, and do something about it, and then maybe, you know, chastise somebody for getting out of line. But I think if you want to go into the future and if you want to take some of that value that you put in, some type of recognition program is an important part of it, I think.
Is that enough time for someone from the provinces to volunteer? We've got 5 more minutes. So, Penny.
Hi, Jackie.
Thanks, Penny.
So I'm the provincial government representative on the National Farm Animal Care Council. Yes, and we've been having these conversations. I know Susan remembers from expert committee days or whatever. So it's always been a gap, and but definitely the codes of practice are very, very important to the provinces, especially in those provinces like Ontario where we don't have we don't have any on-farm animal welfare legislation, we only have animal cruelty legislation. So I would say that for citizens of Ontario, and that versus consumers of Ontario, but for citizens of Ontario, they are looking for, we talked today about, consumers and people want to know information about farming, et cetera. But, and people that know me have heard me say this many times, but, I go to the gym or something, or I go to a party, and if my husband lets me talk about my job, then I talk about my job and say, oh, well, they say, what do you do? And I say, well, I go to slaughter plants and I go to farms, and they're like, oh, and then they say, oh, that's really interesting. I'm really glad that someone does that and that there's standards and that animals are being looked after. And then they say, well, where do I buy my meat is usually the follow-up question. So I think for, citizens versus consumers, and if Tina was here, she could talk more about the citizen-consumer duality, but I think that citizens want to know that there are standards and that they're meaningful standards, and I think the code of practice with the scientist committee and all the stakeholders, I think they do come up with a really good standard, and, that's it's important to people, that's important to citizens, and with the animal care assessment framework and the work we did with the dairy industry, now we're going to be able to show people that in a meaningful way, and hopefully, I know that, Ron, we worked on that with the dairy, that, trying to make that process of animal welfare assurance on farm, trying to make that as painless for producers as possible, and really highlighting, the 1,000 good things that producers do every day on their farms. We just don't tell people that. Another analogy that I use often is that, if you go to Tim Hortons, there's a little check on the door that the bathroom was cleaned. That's the kind of thing we need to be doing in agriculture. I mean, not cleaning the bathroom, but, keeping a constant record of the 1,000 good things. There's good news to tell people. And I think that the codes of practice is an objective. And the codes of practice and the animal care assessment, that's a good way of doing that, a really, all those transparent, robust, science-based, consensus-based, I think that's a real advantage that NFAC that brings. And I know that I'm really honored to be a part of NFAC and to be a part of the codes of practice.
Thanks, Penny. I'd like to pull somebody else have a question or a statement? Great. Well, thank you, Sayer, because you're exactly who I was going to say. So what about people who are not directly involved around the huddle of NFAC? Great. Thanks. I'm glad you volunteered.
Yeah, and I was first going to say, Jeff, I felt really bad for you when
Sayer, can you just, some people were asking who you were, so just if you could.
Oh, sure. With Humane Society International. Jeff, I my heart broke a little bit when you asked Stephanie that question. She just, sort of shot you down about, when you have a group of people who have, worked really closely on an issue, but then those people have to take it back to people that they're accountable to. And I think that's a really good point, and I think that's something that's going to be seen in the future as the codes continue and as, there are contentious issues on future codes. I thought about it as well when Catherine described the code process as quasi-confidential, and I think that speaks to that. And I was just wondering what the panelists thought about sort of the future of the code process in terms of developing a mechanism, and I don't know what that would look like, but about opening it up to some degree so that you don't have sort of these 2 years of, waiting and not seeing anything or just seeing very small amounts, and then suddenly the public consultation where you guys are inundated with, everyone's very often strong opinion about what this small group has come up with.
Before anyone answers, I want you to also answer that question, what you think needs to happen. So.
You want me to go first?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. And I think it's an important discussion to have, and I think there's a lot of room for something like that to be developed. And I've spoken to various people about it before. But I think it is something we should look into further, because I know that stakeholders in animal welfare, or also producers, or people in transport or government, do have a lot of interest in what's going on while this process is going on. There's a lot of watching and waiting, but there's a lot of interest. So I think there could be a possibility of having certain checkpoints along the way. I know that there are progress reports, but there's a certain amount of detail that they go into right now, and there's a lot that they leave out. And I think that the process can be just as important as the final document, because if people don't feel involved in the process, then as we've talked about a lot today, there's going to be more pushback with the final document, because you feel like you're being told what to do, even if you it's your producer association who's saying no, we've signed off on this. But I feel like if people are more involved along the way, there's going to be a lot more acceptance within all of the various stakeholder groups.
Thanks, Sayara. I think Gord wanted to say something.
Well, in answer to Sarah's question, a partial answer to it, first of all, it should be recognized that there were many criticisms levied against the original codes, which, by the way, I think served a different purpose, and that was to bring everybody together and establish a foundation for all of the different interests to be able to work together. And the codes did achieve that goal. And they set the stage for the development of the current process, which has addressed, I believe, all of the previous criticisms. And so now, I guess what you're saying is we need to continue to refine it. But what I wanted to say, with respect to the two-year waiting time, is that what has almost just been completed is unprecedented anywhere in the world, to develop so many codes simultaneously. I mean, it's a monumental task, and obviously we're not going to be able to please everybody, and there are going to be some aspects of it that will be considered to be shortcomings. And I know that NFAC has been collecting information from this latest experience and will be having lessons learned to further improve the process. But as far as the waiting and all of that, my understanding is that the next round of code development will be much quicker. The goal is to not wait so long and to stagger them so that we wouldn't be completely overhauling each code, but making adjustments. So it should be a lot easier, and the communication process should be smoother.
Thanks, Gord. We have one last question, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. So.
Oh, that's Casey Vanderploeg from Cattle Feeders. Just back to the financial resources question for a minute. And it's not a question, it's just maybe a couple of ideas to consider. Just getting back to some very simple questions, NFAC is an organization that provides value for stakeholders in animal welfare. And so answering the question of that value, and then asking those who get a value from it to make a contribution to it, I don't think is outside the pale of any financial orthodoxy. I think that's the first thing to consider. And maybe the second thing to consider is the activities of the organization would appear to me to be very heavily tilted towards education and the advancement of societal benefits. And there's could be a very clear charitable component to that. If the organization was constituted as a charity, then those membership dues and any revenues that it collects would be eligible for a tax deduction as well. So those are two things the board might want to consider, just my humble contributions. Okay?
Thanks very much. And thank you, everyone, for your input. If you were too shy, You can certainly approach us afterwards with your input if you want to do it that more privately. We're more than happy to take it in. Betsy is going to compile that feedback. I've got a few notes too, and like I said, the NFAC board will be having a conversation around this, and we really thank you for your feedback. And with that, I'll hand it back over to Susan, and thanks very much to our panel members for starting us off.